Let's talk about some of the folks that you worked with at WKLO. I've gone through the DJ's page and picked out some folks that I knew that you spent time with, and maybe you can give me a line or two, some memories about the person, and let us know what they were like to work with and some of the stories you might have about them at WKLO. What about Bill Love? You worked with him for a while.
Bill Love was a great guy. He was just always fun to be around. He worked the street like crazy. Showcase Studio Windows, he was single at the time. He met his wife through the Showcase Studio Windows. He met Beverly, and I think they've just married like 35 years now, someplace in there.
Mm-hmm.
Good guy. Really good guy.
All right, what about Rusty Rogers?
Rusty was an unusual individual. Rusty was my assistant at one time. He was very reactionary, but part of that was a amount of being mature, and I mean, I did the same thing. I quit two jobs in a row without having a place to go to, and he did the same thing on me. But he was a lot of talent.
All right, what about Hitman Mac?
Mac Hunter, good guy. He and I had our differences, but he was a good guy. On the website, again, there's my favorite picture of Mac is the one when he's in the Spider-Man suit.
Rip Reinhart.
I remember when Rip bought his house, one of the things I got to do was write the letter of saying, yes, he's employed here, and he's on track to receive this amount of a raise. He was a good guy. Showed up. We had our various athletic teams. Rip will tell you he was never the star of any of those. He was not an athletic person, but he'd show up and try anyway.
All right, Tim England.
Loved him. Tim was a good guy, and I understand he's a doctor now, a kind that doesn't do anybody any good, but that's a different story. Yeah, take that degree to your H1N1, huh?
Exactly.
He was a good guy. I know Beauvray's name is still coming, Tad Murray.
Yes.
Good guy. Saw him at the reunion you had, and was it 05? Did we have that reunion or 06?
We had one each year.
Okay. There are some things that I had to be the one to let Bo go. And I know that he had referenced Bernie Thompson on the air on that. But I was the one that was actually in the room with him at the time to say to him, we no longer need your services, man.
And why was that?
That was because this was a case of going trying to go AC. And he had been, you know, the rock and roll radio guy. And there had been some issues along the line. Solved all the issues at the reunion. I got to talk to people that, you know, for 30 years, it's like, you know, he got the short end of a stick. Because he was a talented broadcaster, still is.
Ended up working in country radio and also News Talk, too.
Yeah, and for those of us who are broadcasters for life, find a niche.
Let's see, what about Jackson Smith, a.k.a. Gary Griffin?
Or someplace in there, Gary Jenkins. We used Gary Jenkins on the air, too.
Okay.
He is the only person that I have any contact with whatsoever anymore from the old staff, and that's usually when one of the old staff dies. I'm trying to remember the last time I talked to him wasn't. Been in the last couple of years. I don't have the contact with folks. One of the things that Ernie Guthridge told me, I remember two things about the first day at WKLO when I sat down with the GM, and he told me all about the profit-sharing plan they had and how my retirement would be vested after 10 years.
In radio, huh?
In radio, exactly. Yeah. And I said, you know, I'm going to be here a year. Well, it turned out being certainly a lot longer than that, but that wasn't part of my plans when I came here. I was planning to be in WKLO for a year and then move on. And the other thing that he told me, and this is the best advice I've ever received from anybody in broadcasting, was make friends outside of broadcasting. Find out what the real people want and talk about. Find out how they live, not how you live and the people you work with live.
Good deal. What about Bob Klein?
Oh, Bob Klein, man of many voices, but none of his own, which I've always said about him. He could do Wolfman Jack, he could do Bill Bailey, he could do, you know, virtually any voice. If he listened to it long enough, he'd pick up on it. He had a lot of talent. Right now, he is working in a mental health institution as a therapist, and from what I understand, does a good job.
And all the other people that he used to work with are probably his patients.
No, I think they skew younger.
What about Steve Parker? Steve Avery was his real name.
Steve Avery is known for the man who punched the hole in the wall the night that AccuWeather would not change their forecast, even though we had a tornado in town. They said, no, it's partly cloudy there. He was a good guy, and I like Steve. He was a salesman, actually, and then when he left WKLO, he ended up being a salesman for WAVG radio, WAVE at that time. Steve was instrumental in me coming back to Louisville from Decatur, Illinois, which we haven't mentioned Decatur yet, because Steve had called me and said, hey, Morning Man's leaving. You need to get in touch with Jim Markham, who was the general manager. And he and I had a relationship prior because I'd worked there part-time on weekends. And he said, oh, yeah, I'd love to have you do mornings for me, and set it up so I'd have to be interviewed by the vice president of broadcasting from the radio side. And on a Saturday morning, Steve said, well, come on. You went in the night before, and he and I went out to dinner. And the next morning, the GM and I meet at this restaurant, same restaurant I've been at the night before. Guy never shows up for the broadcasting side of things, the radio side. So Jim Markham says, well, I guess you've got the job then, don't you? So he's like, okay, fine, you know. But, yeah, Steve and I had a relationship, you know, program director, salesman, and then it became disc jockey and program director. So, you know, he was a good guy.
The last man that did mornings at WKLO was Dave Hutchinson, Hutch.
Loved Hutch. Didn't get to work with him nearly long enough, and I know he's still out there. Have had some contact with him, and he had played the situation in the transition from WKLO as the last morning man at WKLO because Jack Hood unceremoniously just decided he didn't want to go through any transitions, and he was too old to do that, and he went back to Michigan. But Hutch, as the last morning man and then becoming the new morning man of KJ100, he stayed on top of things. He honed his craft as morning man. And the thing that very few people really truly know about Hutch is for a long time he lived in the basement of that radio station.
Really? With the production studio?
Well, you know where the production studio is. You can visualize that. There were two offices in front of the production studio, to the right-hand side of the production studio, and one of them he took over with his stuff.
He was like the hunchback of Great Trails Broadcasting.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
You had your resident morning man in the basement, and it took them quite some time to find that out.
That's funny, and that's a great radio story. Anybody else that we left out as far as full-time jocks when you were there?
Well, let's see. Shotgun Sam Lee. Guns was fun and is in Oregon and doing well and is retired, as so many of us, I should say us, those who have been able to put something away for retirement, but those of us who haven't still work. Chuck Diamond, who had worked with Robin Walker in Peoria, Illinois, came in, and he is most remembered for writing a cold check to the IRS, which is kind of a stupid thing.
Yeah, that really is dumb.
Yeah. Mentioned Dan Mason, who ended up being president of CBS Radio. I think we have covered most of the highlights. There were some others in there, no doubt, who will say, you didn't remember me, but then 6 years and a lot of disc jockeys through there.
What about news people and the WKLO news staff? Do you remember anybody that made an impression as a news person?
Well, Dave White, Ty Meredith, Jess Peterson was the last news director, Woody Stiles, Shirley Smith, who ended up, I think it was the AP that she was doing AP audio for, Angie Gimmel, who ended up, and Rich, Rich didn't work for us, but Rich was at Wacky in broadcast news.
Beverly Herald was there.
Oh, yeah, she was there and did news. More street reporter type of stuff. Eileen Douglas, who was news director, whose husband killed himself.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it off the top of my head.
All right, what about contests and promotions? Any exciting contests or things that you guys did that stand out from these 30-some years ago?
Well, I can tell you about the last thing that we did. That was the Magic Ticket Contest, which was kind of like the last contest. It's self-liquidating, had prize packages. And then when you had a winner, the sales department had to go out and trade the prize, which was, you know, a lot of fun for the sales department, not for anybody else.
Yeah, really.
It's like, okay, you have just won a round trip around the world. You know, it's like, okay, go trade that.
Oh, you didn't do it in advance.
No,
You waited until after you gave away the prize.
You had a prize. Some of the stuff we had pre-traded. But for the most part, like you decided, okay, 4 o'clock on a Friday afternoon, Magic Ticket is going to give away a golf cart with a set of golf clubs. Get a winner, then you start trading.
No pressure. Right?
No pressure whatsoever. I mean, you know, and several things had to be purchased because there was no trade available. But you did have to do as much as possible that way. It did, however, focus the radio stations, being a change radio station. That, and I didn't mention Notre Dame basketball and football in there. And we actually had, in the latter days, carried the New York Yankees baseball. The logic being, at that time, not a whole lot of people were listening to us at night because we blew off the teen audience. So you have to put something on at night that would draw an audience in. And the single easiest thing to do to get daily listings in the paper about a radio station being changed was baseball. Couldn't do the St. Louis Cardinals because this is a Cincinnati Reds market. Falls under their umbrella. But you could do the Yankees because they were on the East Coast. And they did have a network, even in 1979, that you had dial-up phone covers. You could dial in and pick up the Yankee broadcast.
Oh, wow. So it was the American League, so...
Yes, American League, so it wasn't a threat to the Reds. And they had won the World Series the year before. And this market has a lot of people who grew up in the East who live here. In fact, I was listening this morning to the segment I did with Bob and Gary at the reunion back in 91, when the last days of WKLO. And one of the things that reminded me was I had, after the radio station no longer carried baseball and going through the transition, was a judge of a talent contest or MC of a talent contest at Jewish Community Center. And the biggest question that night was, what happened to baseball? Where'd the Yankees go?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, didn't care about the radio station changing, anything else. Where'd the Yankees go?
All right, so I guess towards the end of the 70s, it wasn't really so much of a competition with Wacky. It was just to get as many people there as possible and go after WHAS. Your focus had changed.
Pretty much, yeah. It was a case where, for a period of time, our reaction was to the, okay, we've got the FMs coming at us, now we need to start playing album cuts instead of 45 edits. And that type of thinking was pervasive. One thing in Virginia that we did was we did play number one longer cuts. We credited the album, and that was one of the things that was implemented, was you made sure that when you're talking about a music cut, you're talking about the album it's on, too. To give the impression that we, number one, knew what was going on, which we did, and number two, to make sure the audience knew that we knew what was going on.
I guess the time you were WKLO, you made the transition from records to carts as far as music, right?
Yeah, I'd been working in Virginia with an all-cart system, so it was my goal when I came in. That was the one thing that Shotgun did great. Shotgun wound the greatest carts. Man, I need 10, 15, 3.5, and 4.5 minute carts by the end of the week, and I'd have them the next morning.
Oh, yeah, that is a lost art of making your own carts.
Yeah, you know, we weren't buying carts. We were recycling the 70s and the 40s that broke. Going into New Year's Day of 74, we did the Beatles celebration because there was a 10-year anniversary coming up on February 9th there on Ed Sullivan. So we started New Year's with all Beatles all day. Well, okay, so you just put all the Beatles albums in the studio and say, nope, limit it. Had maybe about 70 Beatles songs carted up. In a very short period of time after that, we went to all current carts and then eventually all carts probably the next year or so.
Made your life a lot easier.
Yeah, because the other problem you had is that the vinyl was getting, quality-wise, it was getting to a point where you really did not want to think about having that song back cued one more time.
All right, after WKLO, what happened to Gary Major? You were talking about working for an industrial supplies place. And
yeah, I got a phone call. There had been a fellow who had been a salesman at WKLO named Mike Crusham, who had been talking with a guy up in Decatur, Illinois, named Steve Bellinger. And I get this call from Steve Bellinger that he's looking for a program director for his automated radio station. And I'm thinking, okay, I understand automation. We've done some sequencing at KLO, and I'd been the computer backup person for traffic at one point as well. So, you know, I said, talk to me. I was out of broadcasting. I'd been out for 6 months. He said, just need a tape. So I was doing a TV booth thing on the weekends at one TV station. Went in, did a couple of tracks, sent it to him. He called and made me an offer, and I said, well, sure, be in broadcasting, learn automation, sure. So I went to Decatur, Illinois at WDZ, and the interesting thing at that point, they had an FM and AM, and I was doing the AM. And on FM, they were developing, and they didn't ever put it into total sequencing by the time I left. They were using Commodore PET computers to do their automation. That was their plan. You know, being somebody who's the little thing like, okay, so what happens when your computers go down? Takes me over to his storage unit. He had the distributorship for the state of Illinois for Commodore computers, which in the early 80s would have been a gold mine.
Yeah, I guess it would be.
He had a funny little newspaper that was a free advertising newspaper, you know, and they're all around the country. We have seen them for years, and then they're kind of drying up now.
The Shoppers.
Yeah, Shoppers papers. And he had several other little business interests, but the radio, the two radio stations were his big deal, and he liked to dabble. Now, this is also the man that, from what I understand from the engineer that worked for him at the time, is he is the man who conceptualized call directories. Because I remember calling a station in 1980 and hitting a call directory. You know, it's like, okay, this is interesting.
That's the automated voice that comes on,
yeah,
and says, punch one for this and punch
exactly.
two for that.
Exactly. He conceptualized it. The engineer's name was Fred Moore, and he's the one who made it happen, at least at that small level. Now, I'm not sure if he has the patent on it or it was just one of those cases where somebody else has a patent and he was a person involved in it. Don't know, don't care. Left there. Came back to WAVE in Louisville, and then 5.5 months into that gig as morning man, the station manager says to me one day, wouldn't you come in? Because I was also a music director. The way it was structured as a union station, you didn't have a program director who was on the air. So I was the music director, the station manager, things funneled from me to him as program director. So he said, do you want to come in my office? I said, your office, mine. He said, oh, why don't you come down to mine today? So I go down to his office, sit down, and said, we're going to make some changes. I said, how can I help Joe? And he said, clear out your office. Thank you. Thank you. So I went, okay, and left. At that time, my son was 3.5 months old. Really appreciated that. The next day, the production director was downsized out the door as well, and his son was a day younger than mine. So we had a couple of new dads who kind of went through the panic stage. Just one of those periods of unemployment we talked about, and was unemployed for a couple of months, and eventually ended up, the thing of having come back from Illinois to Kentucky, Kentucky decided that Illinois ought to be the ones paying unemployment. So it took about 4 months to get unemployment at all. So I did anything I could to scramble for money, but it ended up selling copiers for a while, and then selling life insurance. And then an opportunity presented itself in 1982 to return to Great Trails as the morning man at KJ100, which I did because I wanted to eat. and my family liked to eat and have a roof over their head, too.
Yeah.
So, but you mentioned, you know, being in broadcasting, one of the things I did learn through all this whole thing was keep your options open. And that meant always having another job to either go to or keep another job at least part-time that you could go to full-time if you needed to.
That's a great idea.
I've only had the one period in my life that I didn't have that other option since 1983. So always have something going on. The last 15 years that I've been back in broadcasting, I've also been working part-time in a hospital pharmacy doing data processing.
Oh, good for you. Good for you. And where is that job that you're at now?
Baptist Hospital East.
Okay, what about the radio job you're doing?
The radio station now I'm working for is WJIE, which has a shortwave, which I've been taking care of for, 5 years. Let me fill in the other blanks. Did mornings at a little country station here in town called WTMT for a year and a half or 2 years because they said when I was selling ad specialty stuff, hey, you know, would you like to come and do mornings for like maybe 6 till 9 and we'll pay you like $10 an hour? I said, no, can't do it. Need to be on the street selling ad specialties by 9. But how about I work from 6 till 8:30? And so how about 5:30 till 8:30? I said, okay, fine. And that was like in 1990. They wanted to pay me $10 an hour to come and do part-time work. Sure.
That was good money at the time.
And the ad specialty business is one of those things that at times can be very, very good, but can be very, very harmful.
That's where you sell like junk with people's names on it, right?
Yeah.
Like calendars and keychains and things like that?
All the coffee cups, you name it. Radio stations love them because there are things that put the call letters in their hands, whether it be keychains or whether it be
refrigerator magnets.
Right, exactly. So all those things. Did that for 4 years. Did this country station for a couple of years. Then they started pushing for me to go full-time. Didn't want to do that there. They couldn't afford to give me the money I wanted, so I left. And, of course, that left me with no money from the radio station, which wasn't a real smart move. But, you know, when they hold your feet to the fire, sometimes you got to jump. Then was out of it for a while and then went through a divorce. I did temp work for about 15 months, anything and everything, from shoveling gravel to doing a lot of data processing work. And thank goodness for working on computers back then in the early days because that made my life in later transition much, much easier. Worked for a warranty company and then ended up at the hospital. Then one day I got a phone call from a fellow that had worked with me at the latter days of WCII, which was what WKLO and KJ100 AM became eventually.
Did you work there?
Yeah, we did that. That was part of the KJ100 experience, and then they wanted to do automation on the AM side, and I had automation experience. I said, excuse me, I know how to do this. So we did.
Now, you were talking about automation, but wasn't the FM station at WKLO automated in the 70s? WCSN, is that the call letters?
Yeah, that was a slap up the reels of music tape and let them roll and occasionally have commercials trigger in. And I'd worked with a system like that back in the 60s, actually, in Whitehall had a similar type of thing. It's just you had a couple of carousel cart machine decks, and you had a couple of fixed decks, and you had big reels of music, 10-inch reels of music. And they just basically alternated back and forth, and it was a very simple computer program made that happen.
Now, were the jocks at KLO responsible for changing the reels?
Oh, you know they were. And recording the weather forecast. Now, you have to understand, in the radio station, WKLO studios were showcase studios on Walnut Street, or Muhammad Ali now, and the restrooms were 150 feet in the back of the building. The FM studio was in the basement, so when you were on the air, and you knew when the tapes were going to change, or you know, approximately, you'd have to go out and check on them, but what you'd have to do is you'd have to run down a flight of stairs, run in, start a tape on rewind, run back upstairs, do your break, then run back downstairs and change your tape, go back upstairs, do next song, then go back downstairs, cue your tape, and put it back into sequence. So we did have a young lady who was working weekends who fell down the steps and broke her leg.
Oh, wow. Who was that?
Yeah. For the life of me, the name doesn't come to mind, but okay. She was a nice young lady. She wasn't there very, very long, and obviously not after that. You know, we had probably more than one person probably took a tumble on those steps, but she's the one that really got hurt bad.
All right, so let's get back to where you were going to, I guess, WJIE. Is that where we
were? Yeah, I went to JIE. I went to Frank Kinney, who worked for me and then got to be laid off by me when CII changed formats to Oldies or AC, and he'd been country, put a radio station on the air with a construction permit. The day he put it on the air, I called and said, you know, when you want to get serious about doing what you're doing, give me a call. About 2 years later, he called me and said, my morning news guy just left. Would you be interested in doing it? So I went out and started doing morning news. And my time frame at that point, because I was at the warranty company, I had to be there by 9. So it was like I went out and did morning stuff for Frank from 5:30 till 8:30. That evolved into the fellow who was operations director left. Station was sold to a couple of gentlemen. And suddenly I ended up operations director. It was News Talk primarily at that time was using the CNN headline news service with local stuff occasionally sold, programming besides spots.
Wasn't that WXKN?
XKN, right. Okay. Very good. Went from News Talk, then we went to Business News Talk, and the focus was on selling programs, of course, local programming. And as operations director, I got to be the one to do traffic. Didn't have to do the billing side of traffic, but the only way you keep up with your radio station in the case like that is you have to be the one putting the logs together every single solitary day to make sure you've got all your programs covered. And was doing that and working at the hospital and doing a couple other things, too, for money. And it's like the station was sold again in 1999. Pastor Bob Rogers, Evangel World Prayer Center, purchased it, so we were WJIE AM 680 doing Christian programming. The problem was with the station, we would have been successful had there not been so many Christian stations in this marketplace who were all going for the same thing. And as soon as it was announced that the station was sold to Disney, the big players in town, Salem Radio, raised their rates. We could have just pretended we were being sold. We could have had a whole lot more business. The radio station went over to Disney in early 2002. We had the shortwave at that time. We had a station in Evansville that I did some involvement with. And just since then have done programming for a station in Virginia from here, a station in Florida from here, station in Evansville from here. Did the actual programming out of Louisville via Internet.
All Christian?
All Christian.
Okay.
The shortwave has become my project of the last 5 or 6 years. Almost exclusively, do whatever needs to be done. I'm there part-time now, and that's where it needs to be.
So the hospital job is your full-time gig?
Well, actually, it's also rated as part-time. I work about 35 hours there, probably at the radio station, 15 to 18. So that's okay. I don't mind.
All right, anything that you wanted to hit about WKLO or your time there or your radio career that I didn't ask you about, we didn't touch
on? Well, I think the thing about WKLO is even though a lot of people that have worked for WKLO grew up here in Louisville, grew up listening to the radio station, the experiences I had at WKLO I wouldn't trade for the world. I guess if it were a pinnacle in my broadcasting career, it would be then. Sorry I peaked so early. But the folks who grew up listening to the radio station then got to work there puts it in a total different light than it did for me, because coming in from out of town, I had worked at two of the stations that I grew up listening to. You know, my mom thought it was really, really cool when I worked in my hometown for 5 years, where she could turn on her radio and know her son was doing okay today, because she'd hear him. And here, it was a case of, I came in from the outside, I learned the market, I liked the market, I stayed here. I've been here since 1973, with the exception of 6 months in Decatur, Illinois. This is home. I escaped from Michigan. The way that I look at it is, it's a great radio market, probably one of the most competitive radio markets in the country, and certainly some of the talent here, because of where those people have ended up, certainly knows that we had some real top-flight talent here. And people here have no idea anymore what real radio is like, because there's not real radio here anymore.
But the wacky WKLO battle in the late 60s and early 70s was legendary.
Yes,
and
definitely.
You had two very good radio stations, and each one, by being across the street, metaphorically, made the other one an even better radio station. I'm sure when you were at WKLO, when you first got there and through most of the 70s, what was going on at Wacky and what they were doing was probably top of mind.
Well, yeah, you did a lot of counter-programming. You sat down, you figured out, okay, their rotation is 2 hours and 12 minutes is the way it is this week, you know, and you never kept things the same, never kept music rotations the same, you never kept things the same for long, because you were either forcing a change at Wacky or you were creating something that you were counter-programming that Wacky had done.
Did you feel like you were at the underdog or you were their equal?
The only time I ever felt underdog-ish was in talking to some of the record reps, because Johnny had some very long-standing relationships with people out of Cincinnati area, where I didn't. So when I came in and was music director, and people was like, oh yeah, would you like to go to dinner? But it was always, you'd go to dinner, but Johnny would be there. As you know, you didn't get many solo dinners by yourself. The first year I was here, when I became music director October 1st of 73, in 1974, was named Media Market Music Director of the Year, Bobby Poe's Pop Music Survey.
Mm-hmm.
And that helped a little bit, and a lot of that was Bobby Poe's strength was on the East Coast, and I just spent a year working on the East Coast, so I know I had a lot of support there for that. Had a lot of good relationships to the record industry that were on the national level, people who had been local or had been national when I was up in Michigan, who went on to bigger and better jobs, that a lot of times I could backdoor the local people to get them to pay attention to me.
All right, so what does WKLO mean to you personally, and what do you think it means to the city of Louisville, at least those that remember the 70s?
Well, yeah, the thing is now that most of the people who remember me on the radio are in their, at least in their 40s. And the thing that I have gotten most, I think, for a long time was, oh, yeah, my mom used to make me listen to you.
That makes you feel real good.
Yeah, makes you feel real good, really, really good.
How old are you right now?
I'm 62.
Okay.
From a standpoint of what it means to me is it was a great opportunity that I had that certainly, besides introducing me to a wonderful community, a lot of really great people here. And I work with some really great people, some very talented people. There's a lot of support staff we haven't mentioned that were at the radio station during those days, like Mrs. Brown, Kathleen Brown, who was the business manager for many years, who, of course, everybody didn't want to talk to her about anything because she always wanted to know where the receipts were. Are you sure these hours are correct?
She was very good at her job.
She was excellent at her job, and she was one who handled a full set of books longhand, because that's before computers were in the radio station. And when we had a system that involved computers, she still ran longhand billing until the day she retired.
Wow.
And from a standpoint of what the city of Louisville, the people who grew up here had a chance to listen to some great radio, and they wouldn't really realize just how much better radio in Louisville was until they had to go someplace else. The only other city I can compare battles of Louisville to would be Chicago when it was WCFL and WLS.
Oh, yeah, two great radio stations.
That's the only other two stations. I mean, WMCA in New York and WABC, it was no contest because MCA didn't get out like ABC did.
Mm-hmm.
It was a local contest, but not a regional. CFL and LS were on a regional level as it was here in Louisville. Great radio stations, great competition, and great personalities, and great leadership. I would have to say that my radio days in Louisville have been very blessed.